The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Cynthia Hughes joins me. She's the founder and director of the Patriot Freedom Project. She's the mother of four and turned personal adversity into national action. She founded the Patriot Freedom Project to support January 6th defendants. Cynthia, welcome back. Good to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, indeed. Tell us about your personal adversity that got you into the Patriot Freedom Project, into founding that. What do you say?
So I have a nephew who's lived with me throughout his life, and I mean, he's a grown man. Mm-hmm. He went to the Capitol, you know, on January 6th. He was actively serving in the Army Reserves. He went there. He had a suit and tie on. He went inside, took some pictures, and left. Came home to New Jersey, where we live, went back to work, worked his overnight shift at the military base. And a week later, the feds, along with NCIS, showed up at his house on the military base and raided him. Mm-hmm. And threw him in jail. And there he sat for 3 years. And so, you know, Bill, for the first few months that he was there, it was very hard to communicate with him, and a lot of the families that he was in there with were having the same issue. And so there was nothing, there was no organization, there was nothing going on where you could get information. So with him inside and me out here, we put together the Patriot Freedom Project.
And so it was because of what happened to your nephew then. And so did your nephew ever get a trial, or did he plead out, or, I mean, what happened, you know, there?
Oh, no, we did not take any plea deals. So Tim, his name is Tim. Tim went in the building. He did not go in the chamber. He did not go in the Senate or state rooms. He went into the crypt. He was inside for about 30 minutes. Literally, he's on video taking a few pictures. He doesn't have criminal history. And for that, they threw him in the D.C. jail. Mm-hmm. But before that, they bounced him around the country in about six different jails before he ended up in D.C. And there he went into solitary confinement for more than 1 year.
Now, I just want to be clear about this. So was he ever charged with being violent, or like,
no.
did he punch anybody in the face or rustle any cops, anything like that? Anything happen?
No, he was not charged with any violence. He was not charged with assault. He was not charged with a violent crime. He was charged with a very controversial charge that has been now overturned by the Supreme Court, called obstruction of an official proceeding, or the 1512.
Yeah, and that was and they really stretched the legal definition of that, and that's why the Supreme Court ended up rightly turning that over. It never should have gotten this far. But it also makes it clear, though, that many of these arrests were politically motivated in the first place, wouldn't you say? I mean, ultimately.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, Bill, listen, I'm very, you know, transparent with things of how I see this whole thing. You know, there's some people that went there that day, and they had bad intentions, and they mm-hmm. did bad things. But that is not the majority of people. And the majority of the almost 1,600 people that are caught up in this, you know, were entirely peaceful. And they've had their lives completely and totally dismantled.
Well, even Buffalo Boy, you know, the Buffalo guy, remember him?
Jacob.
Yeah, Jacob. Hansley. You know, and, you know, he didn't do anything. I mean, getting up there, hey, you know, oh, yeah, he's a really violent guy. You know, what it comes right down to it is that essentially we had disorderly conduct going on that day. All right. And we don't normally put people in prison for a long time for disorderly conduct. It usually ends up being something that, you know, yeah, you may have pay some fines, you may do some things, I mean, at worst. But I think what has concerned me most about this, though, was the political drive here to get these people and really shut them up. And I'm glad that your Patriot Freedom Project has been trying to help them out. And with President Trump coming in, maybe some, I don't know if it's restitution would be the right word, but maybe some justice will be done here. I mean, what is your thought about what's coming in here as far as pardons and or commutations?
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but with my organization, I've held a couple of fundraisers that President Trump has attended. Mm-hmm. And I have brought some January 6th families along with children to, you know, to see him. And him and I have had some conversations, and he's had some conversations with the families that he's met. You know, this tugs at his heart, and this bothers him, what's been done to his supporters. You can't come in and say to people, we're going to throw you in jail and throw the key away because we don't want you to support President Trump because we don't want you to say that there was a stolen election that happened in 2020. And that's exactly what happened here. And President Trump knows that. And I know, I feel very confident that he's going to come into office and he is going to make sure that justice is served for these people.
What do you think justice being served to these people unjustly imprisoned with January 6th will look like? What does your gut tell you, Cynthia?
I think there will be clemency for everybody, and clemency, you know, covers a lot of areas. You know, you have to remember there's, you know, people.
Well, what's the difference between a clemency and a pardon, or is it the same?
It's really not the same.
It's
clemency
not.
Clemency could mean a pardon. Clemency could mean a commutation of somebody's sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Clemency could mean, you know, vacate an entire, you know, conviction. You know, we have some people that still have not gone to trial.
Even now?
You know, we have.
Really?
Even now. Even right now. Yes. And they're still arresting people. I mean, they just arrested. The last arrest I believe I know of was on December 22nd or 23rd or something. They are still arresting people, and there are people that still have not gone to trial. There's a young man that lives in Kansas. His name is William Pope, P-O-P-E. You know, he was entirely peaceful that day. He is a pro se defendant. He is, you know, he should be a lawyer. They should just give him a law license when he is done with this, because he has really fought very hard for his case. And he hasn't gone to trial. And now, in light of the 1512, you know, that's been vacated from his record. And mm-hmm. the same thing for my nephew. Can you imagine, Bill, going to trial, fighting your case like my nephew Tim did, being found guilty on the 1512, spending 3 years.
Now the 1512 is that Enron era law that was designed
right.
to go after that, right? Okay, I just want to make sure that the interruption of an official action,
proceeding.
Yeah, proceeding, yeah, you know,
and
that kind of thing.
And so Tim spent 3 years in prison because of that charge, and now the Supreme Court says you can't use this charge in these cases, and it's been totally and completely overturned in Tim's record. Why was he in prison? I mean, essentially, you had a man who served in the Army, who had no criminal history, sitting in prison for 3 years for nothing. There has to be restitution for that. He got kicked out of the Army. He lost his housing. He lost his regular job. We drained his savings, you know, to keep, you know, keep commissary.
So do you think then that clemency is also going to involve some sort of settlement with the federal government over what happened on January 6th to the defendants?
I think there has to be. I don't know if that's a possibility for President Trump. I don't speak for President Trump, but that has to be part of it. There has to be restitution. These people their lives have been upended and dismantled. You have retired Lieutenant Commander Thomas Caldwell from Virginia. He's a 72 or 73-year-old man. He's 72 or 73 right now. He went to trial in 2022. He has yet to be sentenced. They obliterated.
So they're holding off on sentencing some guy from 2022, years later? Almost 3 years later, I guess.
Yes, yes. And he will get a full, you know, a full pardon. But let me tell you, pardons are complicated because these people have to find jobs when they come home. Nobody thinks about the collateral damage in this. This is like a humanitarian crisis. You have to think about what happened to the families, what's happened to these children, the violent raids that have happened on these people's homes that, you know, kids were subjected to. And then you have all these men and women who are, you know, languishing behind bars, almost 300 people at this point. They're going to come out and they got to rebuild their life. Some of these people have lost their homes. They have lost their jobs. They have lost their life savings. Children don't have health insurance. This is not talked about, Bill. Nobody is talking about this. I'm talking about it, and I'm going to keep talking about it, and we're going to make sure that something happens here, because these people have to be they have to get back what they've lost. They won't get the time back, but they have to get back what they've lost.
This will be a high lift, don't you think?
I do think so. I do think so. I think that people think that, you know, President Trump can come in and just wave some kind of magic wand. And
he can wave a magic wand for pardon or clemency. But what he can't do is just say that. Well, of course, on the other hand, too bad that these January 6th defendants don't have student loans, because then we know that like President Biden does, you just, you know, sign a piece of paper and then then your debt goes away. Maybe this is what they should do. They should take out a bunch of student loans and then not pay them back. And then, I'm kidding. I shouldn't mean that. But.
Don't say that out loud, though.
I know. Cynthia Hughes, by the way, is with me. She's the founder and director of the Patriot Freedom Project. How many are in jail right now at this very moment, Cynthia? Do you have a hard number on that still?
We have, it's in the 270s, around that. Just under 300 people that
are in
jail.
Okay, so just under three that are still in jail. About 1,200, though, were the ones that were caught up in the dragnet. And some of them did some bad things, right? You'll agree. Some of them were violent. We know that, right?
I absolutely agree with that. That is an accurate statement. And we're pushing 1,600 defendants at this point.
Okay.
1,600.
So as far as the potential pardons here, have you ever talked with President Trump and everything else? So they're probably not going to do a blanket pardon, right? You wouldn't expect a blanket pardon. They would probably want to look at every one of these individually, and that's going to take time, won't it?
I don't speak for President Trump, but
yeah.
I feel confident in saying that there won't be a blanket pardon. I don't see how there could be.
How there could be. So no blanket pardon. It would be an individual case by case, right?
I believe so.
Now, don't you have to petition the government then to do that, or ask the president to do it? Each family's going to have to do this and come forward and...
Yes. And again, like I said, it's complicated. You know, there's a lot of pressure on the president. You know, a lot of people are putting pressure on him. And let's be honest, Bill, there's a lot going on in this country right now.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that over the weekend, especially.
He's got a full plate, you know, and I know this is a top priority for him. This is an absolute top priority for him, and it will be a top priority for him. But there's some other things going on. I mean, you know, what happened in Louisiana yesterday or New Year's Eve, we can't take that lightly. That is a sign of something bigger, I think.
A deeper rot in the system here. But when President Trump, when you were doing those fundraisers for President Trump, did he make any promises at that point? Or, you know, how did he actually raise the issue of pardons or clemencies when he was with you at Patriot Freedom?
So when I had my fundraisers were for the foundation and for my January 6th family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of women that are struggling out here. So we help pay their rent and their electric. And, you know, we help facilitate a monetary cost for them to drive back and forth to the prisons to visit their husbands. There's a lot of damage here financially to these women. So we've had several fundraisers, and President Trump has graciously attended. And I've watched him talk to these families. I've seen him talk to these families. He has told these families they will have a good life. He has told these families that he will fight for them. He has told these families, even if he didn't become president again, which we knew he would, even if he didn't become president again, he was not going to stop fighting for these families. He has seen these kids. He has gotten down to their level. He has reassured them that everything is going to, you know, turn out okay and work out okay. He has spoken to them. Are you going to school? Are you doing good in school? President Trump is a good man and with a good heart, and he cares about these people. He's going to make sure he follows through on his commitment to them, and that is to bring clemency to everybody that's caught up in this.
One of many issues that are going to be on his plate when he comes in a couple of weeks, you know, for sure. Cynthia,
yeah.
I appreciate you sharing the latest on this one. So I guess the way we depart is guardedly optimistic about the future of many of these defendants?
100%.
Okay.
I think that we can be a little bit more than guardedly. President Trump is not going to leave this on the table. He's going to rectify as best he can what's happened here.
All right. Patriot Freedom Project, where can people find out more about that? Help us out.
You can visit patriotfreedomproject.com, patriotfreedomproject.com. You can find us on Twitter at RealPFP. We have a documentary out. You can visit dueprocessdenied.org. You can see our documentary for free. You can hear from these families. You can see some of these children. We ask you to just continue to help us supporting these families.
Yeah. I know that something which has concerned me most about a lot of the people who are caught up in this dragnet here is how you detail how so many of these defendants, having no prior criminal record, being denied bail. Just unheard of, you know, in this country.
And Bill, if I can tell you really quick, if you have a quick second, you know, when President Trump was still in office from his 2016 win, at the end of his presidency, there was an incident at the White House, and you had Black Lives Matter and you had Antifa, you know, that were in front of the White House, and they were, you know, protesting, and it got a little bit violent. And several of those people were arrested. They were arrested, and they were able to make bond in the same day, and ultimately their charges were dropped. And after their charges were dropped, all of those people filed a lawsuit against the DOJ, and the DOJ settled those cases with those, you know, Black Lives Matter.
Well, you know why? Because the DOJ wanted to settle those cases, right? It's kind of like that sue and settle. We agree. Okay, we'll pay you off and have you go away. You know, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I want to add, you know, because people would say, well, wasn't that Trump's DOJ? No. When those cases got settled, that was Biden's DOJ. Those are the people that settled those cases, the people under Biden's DOJ. And the same thing has to happen now for these people. But let me tell you, it has to be on a large scale because these people have lost everything, everything. We can't let it go. We cannot let it go, Bill, and we're not going to.
I appreciate the update from you, Cynthia, and you be well, and we'll stay in touch. And let's hope that, you know, this mass movement works really well. I know there's going to be a lot on the Trump plate as he comes in here in the next couple of weeks, but I pray that this be near that top of the list. Okay? Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Cynthia Hughes is the founder and director of the Patriot Freedom Project.
You're invited to experience Southern Oregon's best bakery.
835. Hello, Brad. Brother Brad. How you doing?
Brother Bill, Happy New Year. So great to hear your professional voice on the radio again this morning.
It's great to be back, and then I can still, I still remember how to push the button. It's a good thing. What's on your mind?
Hey, yeah, a couple things. You know, first of all, Cynthia, that you're just visiting with, what she demonstrates more than anything else is the almost unchecked power of judicial activism. We have people, you know, these lawyers and people that do this stuff, Bill, as you know, they're not elected. Mm-mm. All these people, they're appointed. They are immune from removal. Most of them are union members. This is just, it's a great, and it should be somewhat of a terrifying reminder of the power that we see being exercised through the judicial branch. And this would be a great time to talk about reforming. So I think with the team that we have now, it'd be a good time to think about reforming some of this unchecked power that we see being exercised that's done so much damage.
I would hope that I will not really be happy about what I see about what happened to the January 6th people until I see government lawyers losing pensions. I really think that needs to happen. Yeah. It's like you need to see people pay a price, not just, oh, well, you just lost your job, but your pension needs to go away, too. You know, when you ended up taking something and stretching it beyond the, you know, under color of law to try to stretch a statute out of proportion just so you could conduct push a political agenda. It's some of the greatest evil that we've seen here, in my opinion.
Exactly. Like Cynthia's nephew, who's a young man. You know, this thing, by the time he gets back to where he would have been, is probably going to take 20 years of his life away from him. And what is 20 years of that young man's life worth for something? But anyway, the other thing on the Modoc and Klamath Indian situation.
Now, that was something you grew up in. You grew up in those neighborhoods, didn't you?
I grew up over there. I went to school with Indians. My oldest daughter was the flower girl in a Klamath Indian wedding. One of our Indian friends, she was a gal. She had to go in the hospital. We took care of her kids for about 3 months. So yeah, I grew up with the Klamaths and the Modocs. There's basically four tribes over there. There's the Klamaths, the Modocs. Mm-hmm. You get over toward Beatty and Bly, you got Paiutes, and then there's a smaller tribe up around Chiloquin called the Yahooskins.
Now, what is that, you know, down there on the XL reservation? What is that? What tribe is that? Do you know?
You know, on the XL reservation?
Yeah, that's the one over by, on the way to Cedarville, California, you know, out there eastern, way northeastern California, Alturas, you know, in that neighborhood.
Yes. Okay. I don't know that tribe.
Okay.
That,
all right. I didn't know if there was any relation going on. Okay.
Yeah. That's too far. Yeah. So you get around Tudor Lake, Newell, that area, that's the Modocs. Right around Klamath Lake, that's the Klamaths, which is, this is the deal, is the Klamaths and the Modocs did not get along long before the settlers.
Reading that Captain Jack book I was telling you, Bob Shan lent me, and it's like they hated each other. They did not get along at all.
Right. I mean, it was like the Roseburg Indians and the Grants Pass cavemen. You know, there was this constant rivalry, right? So things got worse when the settlers showed up and all that stuff. The U.S. Army tried to combine both the tribes, you know, kind of in the same neck of the woods, and it wasn't working very good. So Captain Jack, who was the leader of the Modocs, went back and kind of established a redoubt in the lava beds. And the lava beds are this unbelievably rugged territory that is just, you have to see it to believe it. It is so rugged and so hard to get around in. And Captain Jack knew it like the back of his hand. So the U.S. Army would send, you know, troops of soldiers in there to root him out. And it wasn't happening. They send all these troops in and they'd never come back. So here's where the big problem came from, and you can't overstate how much bad blood this created. The U.S. Army hired scouts from the Klamath tribe to lead them in and show them how to successfully attack the Modocs.
Oh, great.
And they did. So the Klamaths, and obviously it wasn't the whole tribe, it was certain scouts that were Klamath Indians, who already had an axe to grind with the Modocs, so they were happy to do it.
And yet the Klamaths were the wealthier tribe from what I'm reading. They were a much wealthier tribe, much more resources.
They were wealthier. They had access to more resources and all that. So these Klamath scouts went in, sold out Captain Jack and his soldiers. So big bloody encounter. Lots of Modocs died, but the U.S. Army captures Captain Jack. I can't remember how many of his top guys as well, but they take them all back. They take them all back to Fort Klamath, and they get all of the Modocs that they can get their hands on the reservation. They bring them into Fort Klamath, and they hang Captain Jack and all of his top guys in front of their families on a single day.
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine that. Here are the families, these Indian families, watching their loved ones, the leaders of their nation, being hanged on a single day, knowing that it was the Klamaths that sold them out, right?
I'm sure that didn't help intertribal relations after that.
So you go back to the 1960s, and you'll find that Klamath Falls had the highest per capita murder rate in the entire nation. It had the highest per capita murder rate in the entire nation, and 90% of it was Indian on Indian. Because 1 week, the cops called it the hot block. It was actually more than one block, but there was a kind of an area in downtown Klamath where there was a bunch of bars and restaurants and whatnot. And there might be some Modocs in there, and then some Klamaths walk in, and then chaos.
In other words, the memories were that long, even 100 years later, about what was going on.
It's still. But I'm telling you, you cannot imagine the vitriol and the Klamaths and the Modocs, even to this day. But it was bad. I'm just telling you, it was really bad, Bill.
Yeah, I can understand why. I haven't gotten to the hanging part of Captain Jack, but yeah, I know how that story ends for sure. But
The U.S. Army should have never done that. That was a really dumb thing that they did, to hang Captain Jack and all of his top people in front of their families. That was really stupid.
Yeah, in retrospect, you're probably right about that, Brad. Hey, appreciate the call. Thanks for the history. Like I said, it's just fascinating. It really is. And I did read a little bit of that. I need to get on that. Bob, I'll get you the book back. Really, I will. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Who's this? Hello?
Have you got Scott?
Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill. Hey, I got one question and two comments.
Sure.
First question. A few weeks ago, or a couple months ago, you were going to get back to the person that did the testing on the river there, Shasta River.
Yeah.
On the
Klamath.
Aluminum.
On the Klamath, yeah.
Yeah. So was that bare aluminum, or was it aluminum connected to another mineral?
I don't know. I have not. I never did get an answer for that, and I think it's one of those things, Scott, that kind of got lost in the shuffle of the end of the year. I don't know. And now, aluminum, of course, is very, very common, as we all know. It's like one of the most common you know, or bauxite, you know, in the naturally occurring. I'm very sorry that I have neglected to do that. And let me see if I can get an answer from the Grant GP Water Lab. I'm making myself a note on this one, okay?
Okay, very good.
All right.
Okay, two other things. You know, our borders are there. That's coming up. He made the comment in a congressional hearing to one of the congressmen. It's either a senator or a congressman. I don't remember which now. But anyways, she was trying to shut him down, and he says, "You work for me, lady."
Mm-hmm.
And told her two or three times. And the problem that we have in this country is government's got so big, and with all the underlings and so forth, they think they own us and run us. And it needs to get back to a place where they understand that they work for us.
Yeah, that we are not, in essence, their cattle or their chattel, as the case might be. But of course, you know, try that with a police officer, though, right?
No, but at the same time, you can watch enough videos online where people challenge the police officers that know the law.
Yeah.
And they do back down. Anyways, the last thing I wanted to get here for Conspiracy Theory Thursday, there's a group of physicians that have come together, and it looks like they're going to be working with Kennedy on resolving things. But one of the things that's happened is the mRNA shots, now they have moved those into cattle, for example, and all kinds of animals that we eat.
So having mRNA parts within the food system, huh? Hmm.
That's right. And so it's like the aluminum. The fish eats it, you get injected, it's in the food, and it affects your body. One of the things that they're injecting is something that Bill Gates came up with, our wonderful food poisoner here. This thing that goes into the cow ends up in the milk, and they say, no, it doesn't end up in the milk, but it changes to something else by the time it gets to the milk, and that will go into the what we drink. And what it does is it shrinks in women, it shrinks their
ovaries.
Their ovaries.
Okay, could you just send me the information on that one, Scott, if you could? Because I've not heard of that, but nothing surprises me today. All right? Thanks for the call. I'll grab one more. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill, it's Herman.
Hey, Herman. Welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, and I'm glad all the See's candy's gone.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I loved it, don't get me wrong, but I ate a few too many carbs over the holidays.
Yeah. Hey, listen, that's an interesting discussion on Captain Jack, the MODOK
yes.
Indians over there, but I want to share a little experience. When I was in the Senate, there was a senator that got up and did a lengthy remonstrance on the MODOK Indians and how badly they were treated. And it was a fairly detailed, lengthy remonstrance. And when they were done, I couldn't resist myself. Now, you have to understand the setting in the Senate chambers in Oregon. On all four walls up high are names of individuals that helped settle the Oregon territory.
And many of these people, by the way, I'm reading in this Captain Jack biography, Canby, various other people, which many of our towns are named after, right?
Exactly. And so when I got up and spoke, I asked the Senate, I directed them to the south wall of the Senate chambers, and I said, there you will see listed as General Canby. And General Canby was a military general who was trying hard to settle these wars in the Klamath area and set up a meeting with Captain Jack and other leaders under a flag of truce.
If I recall correctly, I think Captain Jack broke that, didn't he?
He killed them. He killed the general and he killed the minister, too. And so, you know, there's two sides to the story. You know, that people need to hear the whole story.
Indeed. But I also have to admit, though, there was a lot of abuse handed out on both sides of that thing, for sure. You know, there really was.
Yeah, but under a flag of truce.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That That's a bad one. That's a bad one, Herman. Hey, appreciate the call.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Herman. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Oh, this is Disgruntled Jay. I used to do kung fu fighting, and I'd go down there in the Klamath Falls on the first of the month, and you want to fight? You got to fight, dude.
You're kind of concurring then with what Brad was talking about, that if you wanted to get into the fight, you went to Klamath Falls and just messed with some tribal people? Is that what you were going to?
Not really. I waited for them to mess with me.
Oh.
You know, you white man, I'm going to beat you up. All right, come on. You better be prepared, man. You better know how to take control of a weapon, a knife, or a gun.
Well, Disgruntled Jay, it sounds like you had some colorful nights over there in the Klamath area. Okay. I appreciate the call. Let me break here just a moment. Let us do the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. It's not going to be about the Indian Wars, though. It's not going to be about that. But it is about something that most of us were old enough to remember, okay? 770-5633, 770-KMED, 770-5633. If you have not played the Diner 62 Real American Quiz in the last 60 days, or if you've not won it, I should say, you could win it in this particular case. And by the way, Happy New Year from Randy and the crew at Diner 62, and they've extended the Hot Open Face Sandwiches special for a short time there, with the pot roast sandwich served with mashed potatoes and brown gravy, or the hot turkey sandwich with mashed potatoes, gravy, and cranberry sauce. Keep a little bit of that holiday on your plate there. 770-5633. Let's play it next, okay? Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Sharice.
And KMED.com. Welcome to the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
851, I can't drive 55. In fact, that's what about our Diner 62 Real American Quiz is all about. Let me go to line two first. You're first in line. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello?
Me?
Yeah, it's you.
Hello.
Oh, Carol.
Okay.
Hey, yeah. Happy New Year, Carol. So
Happy New Year to you.
It was today in 1974, President Richard Milhouse Nixon signs the Emergency Highway Energy Conservation Act, setting a new national maximum speed limit to 55 miles per hour. The act intended to force Americans to drive at speeds deemed more fuel efficient, thereby curbing the U.S. appetite for foreign oil. The embargo, of course, from OPEC had a global impact, sending the U.S. and European economies into a tailspin. OPEC lifted the embargo in March 1974, less than 3 months later. When did Congress get rid of the speed limit, the national 55-mile-per-hour speed limit? Was it A, 7 months later, 1974? Was it B, 7 years later, in 1981? Was it C, 14 years later, 1988? D, 1995, which was 21 years later? Or was it E, 28 years later, 2002? When did 55 go away? What do you say, Carol?
Oh, my. that's terrible.
Seven months, 7 years, 14 years, 21 years, or 28? What do you say?
How about 7 years?
7 years. Was it 7 years? No, it wasn't. I'm sorry. I was pulling for you. All right, let me go to the next line. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
This is Mike.
Hello, Mike. Wasn't 7 years. So when did 55 go away? Was it 7 months after it was signed, 14 years later, 21 years later, or 28 years later? What do you say?
Did you say 1988? Was that 14 years?
Yeah, 1988 was 14. You want to use that?
Yeah.
No, sorry. I'm sorry about that. I hate saying no. I'd like to give everybody a quiz prize, but hi, good morning. Who's this? Hello? Hi. Oh,
is it me?
It is you. Who's this?
John.
John, 7 months, 21 years, or 28 years? How long did it take to get rid of 55.
Is it 21 years?
It is.
You're a winner!
Indeed it is. You're the winner, John. When the act passed, most states quietly adjusted their speed limits, though western states, home to the country's longest, straightest, and most monotonous rural highways, only grudgingly complied. And even after drivers continued to face high gas prices and attempted to conserve fuel by buying revolutionary Japanese economy cars, all right? So there we go. That's what happened. And And of course, if it wasn't for Sammy Hagar, we still wouldn't be talking about it, though. Still a great song. Can't Drive 55. But you're going to Diner 62 and drive the speed limit on 62, all right? Could you do that, John? Hang on. All right.
Yeah.
I'll be right with you. Hang on. I'll need your name and address and all the rest of it, okay? 770-5633. Hey, here's another number, though, and that's 482-3715. That's the number over at J. Austin & Company, Gold and Silver Buyers. Gold is not at its peak right now. It's more in the neighborhood of kind of setting up, kind of finding support at the 26-26.50. I haven't checked the price of it this morning. That means that gold could be setting up for a bull, as stocks are starting to look a little nosebleedy overpriced. But, you know, talk to your financial advisor and then talk to J. Austin & Company, Gold and Silver Buyers in Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. A little bit of physical gold. Hey, silver is certainly on sale right now at the moment, too. Get that at a pretty darn good price and more. But it's all about, just in case, outside of the dollar system, as it were, wealth preservation is what it's all about. And J. Austin can help you either on the buying or selling of it. Great people. J. Austin, brokers.com, fortunereserve.com. Once again, the recognized experts, J. Austin.
With Father and Son Dorian, I'm on KMED.
8:58, an email of the day or two, and that's sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry. Dr. Steve Nelson, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. And that's on Freeman Way. While you wait, crowns available, good people there, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Richard, formerly from Alturas, writes me, Bill, the XL reservation you were asking about, the Pitt River Tribe. That's right, that's what that was. Thank you. Never looking at the signs. Bonnie writes me on the naming of children. Bill, as Scott Robbins says, there should be a board for name approval. Anyone giving their child one of these artsy, new-agey names outs him or herself as self-centered and ridiculous, further proving by their upset when we mere mortals can't pronounce or spell them. When we name our children, we went with common spellings and avoided names that could easily morph into anything derogatory. Vicky into Icky, for example. It worked. Glad you had some time off, but also glad to have you back. Happy New Year. Thank you very much, Bonnie. And Daniel on Nightmare Tenants. Bill, I used to screen potential tenants for apartments. One of my best methods was to walk the applicant to their car at the end of the interview. The condition of that car told me a lot about what my apartment might look like after they moved in. Thanks for the wonderful show. Hey, Daniel, I appreciate that. Thanks so much. The email, Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. And we'll have, it's a short week, right? We'll talk again on Friday. Plenty to do then. Email Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. See you then.
Southern Oregon's place to talk. KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point, Medford, a bi-coastal media station.
It's 9 o'clock at KMED.